Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about something that many, if not most of us, experience at some time or another, where we are a punching bag for our child's anxiety and OCD overwhelm. When they're stressed with anxiety or OCD, we are a clear target. I don't mean to laugh, but it is kind of funny if you think about it when you're not in the middle of it. And I want to talk about why that is and how to work around that, how to get yourself out of the line of fire so that your child actually can make progress. Because sometimes it's a deflection where if we get squirreled, our kids are actually losing a learning moment. We'll dive all into that and I'll tell you what the heck is she talking about. We'll go into it. But before we get started, I want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and they're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. actually. You can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That's treatmyocd.com. I will also leave a link in the show notes. Also, my OCD workbook is now available everywhere except Australia. I'm so sorry, Australia. I have no idea why it's coming out 3 months later. I don't know why that is, and I apologize for that. So if you are in Australia, it's coming out in May. No idea why. But everywhere else around the globe, it is currently available. Wherever you buy your books, Amazon, Target, Barnes & Noble, wherever, you can definitely get them online. And you can go to natashadaniels.com/OCDbook for a quick, rememberable link to just get you to Amazon. And in my OCD workbook, it is for kids ages 8 to 12. I do think there's some wiggle room for younger kids and for older kids who are not annoyed by cartoons. Like the skills that I teach are universal. Literally, an adult could pick up this book and it can help them because it is the skills that everybody who has OCD needs. But it is designed for kids 8 to 12 because there's cartoons in it and I speak in a language that is very digestible. So it's really appropriate for anyone that you think that would work for. And I didn't just put in how to crush OCD and move right into skill building. I talk a lot about foundational stuff that's so important, like how to spot OCD and its many disguises so that when your children's or your teen's OCD morphs, they can recognize that because they are very knowledgeable and they know exactly what OCD looks like, no matter what face or disguise it's wearing. I also include in there some work on how for them to understand how OCD grows, how exposures actually work and help them, and how to pull back their involvement or trying to seek out involvement from parents through accommodations to participate in those OCD compulsions. And I also sprinkle in some self-esteem work, some self-love, and some celebration of the brave steps kids are taking, and also maintenance. I put a lot in one tiny little workbook because I want one book to cover it all, and I want them to have like an entire foundation. So if you've been looking for a really comprehensive book for your child for OCD that will educate them, that will teach them exposures, and will teach them self-compassion and how to detangle themselves from your involvement in OCD, check out my book. It is now available and you can go to natashadaniels.com/OCDbook. Okay, today, this topic actually came up because we were doing a AT Parenting Community live class. We do them on Zoom each week in my AT Parenting Community, which if you've ever wanted to know, hey, what goes on in the AT Parenting Community, you can always check that out at atparentingcommunity.com. But we have this amazing group of parents and we do live Zoom classes each week on topics that they vote for. And we were talking about, what was the topic last week? Oh, it was how to help kids with negative self-talk, how to help kids with anxiety and OCD with negative self-talk. And somehow we got into this whole discussion about how our kids kind of hook us in for debate, you know, that we get hooked in and they're looking for the push-pull. And we talk about why that is. I was talking to a parent about how to not get into that push-pull relationship. And a mom in there said, do you have a podcast that I can listen to that will go more in detail about that? Because we struggle with that in my house. And I was like, I actually don't have a podcast specifically on that very specific topic. But who couldn't relate to that? And so I promised them I would be doing it the next time I record an episode, which is today. So I think it's a really good universal topic to talk about, because so often that's where the burnout happens, is when we are the punching bag for our child's anxiety or OCD. So I want to go into first, we're going to talk about how it happens, why it happens. And then after the break, we're going to talk about how to separate yourself out and not fuel this fire. So let's first talk about why are we punching bags for our kids? That might be the first question that you have. And it's very easy to think that our kids are using us as a punching bag versus anxiety and OCD. And you might think that's semantics, Natasha. It's my kid. Like, I'm their punching bag. It does really help to separate and depersonalize this, because when kids have anxiety or OCD, or even yourself, like when you're overwhelmed or you're irritated or whatever, we take it out on the people that we love the most, which is really annoying, but it's true. We all do this on some level. But it's the anxiety and OCD that is coming out. It's the anxiety and OCD that's stressing them out that is making you a target. So it's common, because they feel the safest with us. They feel the most, I'm trying to think of the right words. It's a safe person to throw it at. It doesn't make it better and it doesn't make it good. You know? But that's one of the reasons why. But there's other reasons too that I think people don't realize. And I want to talk about that too, is when we're dealing with anxiety and OCD, I have two choices. I can deal with my anxiety and OCD and my struggle, or I can battle you. And it feels a lot better, physiologically actually, to battle you than to battle my anxiety and OCD. So what do I mean by that? If you say you need to go to school, or you can do this, you know, I know you can do this. I know it's hard, but we need to go to school. And I'm just going to use school as just a random example, because there's so much school anxiety and school avoidance when we have anxiety and OCD. So it's just an easy one to use. And so your child's all ramped up and they're really anxious about going to school for whatever reason it may be. And let's say you're a positive cheerleader. You may not be, right? A lot of us aren't when we are pressed with time and the stress of the school is giving us stress about you not being there, whatever. And so let's just say you're being compassionate and you're like, I know this is hard for you and I know that you can handle it and you're doing so good. And all of a sudden your child just throws like darts at you. And they're like, you don't understand. And I hate this and I can't do it. And you're like, you can do it. And they're like, I can't do it. Why are you telling me I can do it when I can't do it? And what you have done inadvertently is you've put yourself in the line of fire. Your child has taken all that cortisol and all that adrenaline that's pumping through their body because they are in fight or flight mode, and you've made an easy target. I can unload this on you because I don't want to deal with the fears underneath. I don't want to deal with my own fragility. I don't want to deal with having to face the overwhelm that is school. And so it's much easier to see you as enemy number one, not anxiety and OCD, because then I can yell at you, scream at you, and then you, ideally, this is the part that's interesting, will fight back. And now I've successfully squirreled you. Now you're yelling at me that you're going to be late, or that school's giving you pressure, and that you can't live like this, and this isn't going to happen. And I'm yelling back at you, and I'm feeling really good in the moment. Maybe not consciously, but physiologically, I'm feeling maybe good because I am cortisone dumping. I am getting all those chemicals out of my system by targeting you, and I want to rage. And it's just really nice to rage on something or someone. And after the dust settles, everybody feels bad most of the time, some of the time, right? You feel bad because you lost it. Your child feels bad because they lost it. And there's this kind of like outburst hangover that happens where everybody feels pretty horrible about the situation. Most of the time, I know you may not have a child who does that, but a lot of times they feel bad afterwards. And then you wind up in this vicious cycle because some things have been reinforced. What's been reinforced? Well, for starters, we didn't have to talk about my fears anymore because I turned it into an argument and you got hooked right in and you got squirreled really easily and we got to both cortisol dump. I'm making a new term here. And so that actually helped avoid the topic at hand. I didn't have to talk to you anymore about my fear of going to school or why this is going to be horrible. We got to scream at each other and avoid the topic altogether. Also, maybe my big meltdown or outburst made you back down a little bit because, you know, my bark is loud and then you kind of feel defeated. And so that was pretty effective. Not to say that we can't or shouldn't back down. Sometimes it's a bridge too far and we do need to recalibrate and say, okay, maybe this is too big of a step. Or I know for me, I can tell when my kids are gone, you know, that it's gone too far. And I know when like it's not going to work out, like nothing's going to happen because they're in panic mode. And so it's not going to work. The other thing though, is that there has been a reinforcement in how they felt physiologically. It felt good to shout and scream and get all that out. And so there was almost a physiological reward that I was really pent up and I was really overwhelmed and I was really anxious. And then I exploded and then I felt better. Not mentally afterwards, but physiologically, there was a release. And we don't want our kids to inadvertently develop this pattern of this reinforced pattern of, I'm overwhelmed, I have a meltdown, or I target you, you get hooked in, we target each other, I cortisol dump, I feel better, and we never have to talk about it. We don't want that, right? Because it's reinforcing so many different things that we don't want. And yet, it's very hard to not get tangled into our kids' struggles. And so how do we handle that? What do we do? Because our kids much rather battle us than battle anxiety and OCD a lot of the time. And so we have to get out of the line of fire because we are actually, when we get squirreled, we are robbing our kids of an opportunity to learn. We're robbing them of an opportunity to sit with their discomfort and face anxiety or OCD head on. It's you against you. It's you against anxiety and OCD. It's not about me. It's not my journey. It's not my thing. Your success or your failure is not me. I love you. I care about you. But ultimately, this is your journey. It's a solo journey. It's not about me. And when we get squirreled, we make it about us. Not that we want to make it about us, but we do because we're human and it's the intuitive response. It's a natural thing that happens when we are faced with this invitation to get hooked in. So after the break, I want to talk to you about how to not fall for that enticing invitation and how to get out of the line of fire so your child can actually face its true demons, which is the anxiety and OCD and not you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, you know, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding your touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful, and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class, and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still, and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures. Before it was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it, and I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com. Well, welcome back. So before the break, we were talking about all the many reasons why we as parents are often a punching bag for our child's anxiety and OCD. And we talked about how it actually inadvertently grows anxiety and OCD, and it grows the pattern. When we fall into this pattern over and over and over again, it's a dance that we do that actually winds up getting reinforced and stays around longer. And we don't want that. So let's talk now about how do you detangle yourself or not get hooked in so that your child can actually see the situation for what it is, which is their journey, their solo journey, and their anxiety and OCD, not yours. So the first thing I would say, and this one's a hard one, easier said than done, is don't fight back, right? And that's why I've spent so many episodes talking to you about lovingly detach. I did a whole episode on that. That was episode 249, how to lovingly detach, because we want to be present for our kids. We don't want to be consumed with our own triggers. And so lovingly detach doesn't mean I'm going to go somewhere else and I'm going to detach from you, or I'm going to not care about your anxiety or OCD. It's how can I show up as fully and completely as possible for you in the moment without bringing my own triggers, my own childhood struggles, my own insecurities into the dialogue and into the conversation. Another good episode, if you're like, ooh, this is interesting, I never really thought about that, is to listen to episode 348, where I talk about, does your child's anxiety or OCD trigger your own childhood wounds? So if that is something you want to dive more into, and that actually might be a good thing to listen to after this episode, the lovingly detached episode and the childhood wound episode, because something's being activated inside of you when you get hooked. And understanding what that is and why that is really important. We have to do our own work to say, whoa, why did I respond like that? And there's all sorts of stories that we tell ourselves when our kids are targeting us, all sorts of our own childhood wounds that pop up that remind us of another situation or another relationship. We're not a blank slate, as much as I wish we were. And you need to understand all that to anchor yourself and detach. So the simplistic advice of do not fight back, fire does not burn when it's not fed. And so we don't want to be that fuel line, right? And I always think about that. Am I a fuel line right now? There's a fire burning. And do I really want to go over and pour a bunch of gasoline on it? Because any interaction I have with my child right now in this moment is gasoline to the fire. I actually use that language with my kids when they are antagonizing or egging on their sibling who might be struggling with anxiety or OCD or just struggling in general. I'll use a whole bunch of analogies. Sometimes I'll be like, you know, he's a bear right now. Do not poke the bear. Why would you poke the bear? We don't need to poke the bear. Or I'll say, there's a fire raging over there and I don't need you to be fuel. And so using these analogies, these visuals can be actually really helpful for everybody in the family. Is I don't want to be a fuel line, right? Sometimes when a fire is burning, what can you do? It's only containment. You don't have a lot of control. It's only containment. And so when you fight back and you put fuel on the fire, you are just letting it burn longer. And as we talked about before the break, you're actually reinforcing this cycle. And so you're guaranteeing that this is going to happen again. And who wants that? We want to extinguish that kind of behavior as much as we can control, and we don't want to fuel it or reinforce it. And so we don't want to personalize it. And if you are personalizing it because your child's saying horrible things, or you're thinking, I'm doing so much for you, I've been trying to help you, you do nothing, why are you saying this to me, how can you target me after all the things I'm doing for you, and you start to feel resentful, that's stuff to process separate from your child. Even like whether you have your own therapist or just in your own brain, I am processing these kind of things in my brain all the time. I'm like, whoa, that was a big reaction. Why did I respond that way? And it could be for lots of different reasons at different times, but I'm not just beating myself up about it. I also want to learn from it because everything's a learning opportunity. I know that sounds like such a trite therapist thing to say, but it is true. Everything is a learning opportunity. Are you making it about you when they are looking to have you be a punching bag? And it's not purposeful most of the time. Our kids are not plotting and planning how they're going to ruin your day, or plotting and planning how they're going to focus on you as enemy number one instead of their anxiety or OCD. It is a last resort defense mechanism. It is a fight, flight, or freeze response. I'm in a corner. I don't know how to handle this. You're standing next to me in this corner. I'm going to target you. When you do that, your child doesn't get the opportunity to battle their anxiety or OCD. So let's talk about what this would look like in real life. Let me give you some examples. Let's say your child is anxious about something, like a concrete thing. Last night, my daughter was really anxious about taking a math test. And if you have a child that you notice this pattern, and I say child, but I mean teen, young adult, it doesn't matter. If you have a child who is venting about feeling anxious about something, and then when you offer solutions, they bite the hand that offers the solution. That's a clear sign that they don't want your input, or that you become a dumping ground for the cortisol. And so let's say your child is having a hard time and they're anticipating something the next day. They're saying, I'm so worried. I have to go present tomorrow and I'm really anxious about it. Or let me try to think of something else that's a little bit more anxiety and OCD common. Well, how about we going on the school example, we'll just follow that the whole way through this episode. And honestly, just replace this with anything else you're dealing with, because it's all interchangeable. So, but just for consistency's sake, let's say that your child is anxious. It's Sunday night. They've had school avoidance or school fears, and all of a sudden they're starting to get ramped up. I don't know. Oops, sorry, that was my watch. I don't know if I can go to school tomorrow. I'm feeling really anxious. What if blah, blah, blah happens? And it's a situation where it's an invitation. It seems like an invitation to make them feel better. And we fall into this trap pretty easily. Now, some kids are not like this. Some kids might really like you coaching them through. But if you're getting hooked, this might be happening, where your child is spinning up and they're feeling really anxious. And then you come in and you have this pattern where you say, you can do it, you know, you're going to be great, it'll be fine, blah, 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 whatever you're going to say. And all of a sudden, you become enemy number one. And then your child says, it won't be fine. It's not going to be great. When you offer some support or solutions, they shoot you down and then you're target number one. So if you know that's a pattern, or if that's a common pattern, it can be helpful to not offer solutions. It can be helpful to just sit in the validation of, I'm sorry that you're having a hard time. There's no push and pull, right? If you think about it as a tug of rope? No. A rope, like tug of rope. Why am I saying that? Like tug of war. Think of it as like tug of war. I'm like combining like two things. I'm like, what am I? Is my brain trying to say? That push pull, right? We don't want that push pull. I don't want to go on one side of the rope and my child on the other side of the rope. If I sense this, I'm going to let go of the rope. And so you're constantly assessing, are we playing tug of war? Are we in a push-pull situation? Because if we're on a push-pull situation, I want to be on the same side of the rope. I want to let go of the rope or be on the same side of the rope. A lot of times I neutralize myself, and I would do this in my practice when I had a private practice, and I do it with my own kids, where if I feel like there's an antagonistic element to the conversation, or there's an adversarial vibe to it, then I let go of the rope completely. So for instance, if my child was like, I'm so nervous about going, and it starts off very inviting, right? I'm so worried about going to school tomorrow. And then maybe you say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. What's the scariest part about going to school tomorrow? Well, what if, you know, what if I get sick tomorrow? What if I throw up? You know, my stomach has been off all weekend. And then you might swoop into skill building and be like, well, what do you need to tell yourself? Or have you thrown up before in school? You know, you can do this. You know, your absences have been really good. We don't want to ruin it. And all of a sudden, maybe your child is like, you don't get how hard this is. And you don't understand that every day is so hard for me to go to school. And then you realize, okay, I'm in a push-pull situation. Let go of the rope. I'm sorry, this is hard for you. I know it can be a big struggle. You know, you don't add to the conversation. You just validate the struggle. I know this is hard for you. Now, if your child is really looking to get you hooked on that push-pull relationship in that moment, they might really come at you and be persistent. You don't understand how hard it is for me. Why are you saying that? And then it might be better to just, you know, say something and then walk away. Like, you know, it seems like you're really frustrated right now. You might need some space. Or whatever you need to do to discontinue the conversation when it's turning into a toxic push and pull conversation. But a lot of times when we just sit and validate the struggle and there's no push pull, it kind of dies down a little bit. And so you have to, you know, I think when you pay attention to how this happens, you can start to see it more often. And letting them know that this is their struggle, not yours, can be really helpful. I'll try to give you some more examples. Last night, I'm trying to think of real life examples. Last night, my son has been having a harder time lately, like eating foods that overwhelm him. He's got ARFID, avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. He's got a really rough relationship with food. And so I'm noticing a lot of times lately, as he's doing better in therapy and he's doing more exposures, I'm trying to offer him more opportunities to push back on his ARFID. So last night, my daughter and I were in a cooking class, a virtual cooking class. And so we had a frittata, scones, and some pretzels. It was a gluten-free cooking class because she has celiac. So we made a whole bunch of stuff. And he didn't want to try the scones because it had blueberries in it, which looked gross to him. He didn't want frittata because it had eggs in it. But then it was smelling good. And so he's like, oh, I want some of that. And I was like, okay, I'll cut you some. And then he looked at it and his OCD was like, nope, can't do it. And so I said to him, well, it's sad that you're not going to eat it because you thought it smelled good. And I was like, do you want to take a bite? And he's like, I don't want any of it, you know? And so I offered him an exposure challenge and I said, well, you can earn 5 points if you eat it. And he's like, I won't eat that for 1,000,000 points. And when I'm starting to feel that push-pull, it's subtle, right? Because I'm offering an exposure and I'm getting kind of like a nasty response back. I felt like I was on the other side of the rope. Think of that metaphor. So I put the rope down and I said, you don't have to eat it. It's not my battle. It's not my ARFID. You do what you want to do. I'm just saying, you know, when your ARFID always tells you, ew, that's gross, and you just don't even try, it's an opportunity, but that's up to you, right? Put down the rope. And then he said, well... And I left the conversation because he was looking for the push-pull. He was looking for me to keep going on about how he needed to eat it. I'm not getting into a conversation with you. We're not going to have a push-pull relationship. And then he said, well, what about if I have one bite? How many points will that be? So he came back and counter-offered. And again, I had to act nonchalant because I didn't want to pick up the rope again. I said, you do you. If you want to eat a bite, yeah, I'll give you 2 points. And then I went on to do what I was doing because I didn't want to look invested in it. And so he did take a bite and he got 2 points and I didn't make a big deal about it even after because it wasn't about me. I didn't want him to think that he made me proud or that he made me happy because it was about him. So it's just kind of an example of when are you picking up the rope? And maybe you have to pay attention to this and ask yourself, am I in a push-pull conversation right now? And if so, how do I get out of this? I remember a while ago, I had a conversation with my daughter. And she was just really heated up about, I'm trying to think what it was even about. She had taken a test. She has a lot of perfectionism issues. And she had taken a test and she didn't do as well as all of her incredibly smart friends. She got a great score, but it wasn't the best score in her social circle, which is a very hard social circle to be in. And she came home in such a nasty mood. This was a while ago. And I moved right into, you know, trying to boost her up. Like, well, you know, we don't want to compare ourselves to others. We only want to compare ourselves to ourselves. And, you know, you did a great job. And, you know, I just went into like the normal parenting mode. And the more I talked and the more I tried to help, the angrier I noticed she was getting. And that doesn't always happen with her. And so you might have a different push-pull conversation at different times, depending on your child's mood. Sometimes they might legitimately want you to be their cheerleader, their coach, and give them advice, give them support. And other times they're not in a place for that. And it becomes more of an adversarial discussion. And so we have to be able to decipher and discern, when are we in a push-pull conversation and when are we in a supportive conversation? And often our kids are the ones that dictate that. And so maybe 10 minutes into the conversation, I realized that the more I talk, the more her fire is burning. And so eventually I said, you know what? It kind of feels like maybe right now there's nothing I can say that's going to help you. And so I'm sorry that you're feeling like you're struggling, and I'm sorry that it's been a rough day. And that's all I said. And I kind of walked away, and she kind of followed me and was like, that's all you're going to say? Because she was really wanting the burn. She was looking for that adrenaline dump. And I was like, there's nothing else I can say. Anything I say right now is making you angrier, and you don't need that because you already had a rough day. You don't need me to make you angrier. I'm sorry it was a rough day. Well, aren't you going to tell me that I'm smarter and that I can do better? And I was like, you can tell yourself that, because the more you tell yourself that, the more effective it will be. You don't want someone else dictating it. It kind of is of the same ilk of what the problem is, you know, where we're comparing ourselves to other people. You don't need my opinion or my words. You need your own words. So again, put down the rope. Not in it. I'm not going to get into a fight with you. So I invite you to look at, when are you picking up the rope? When are you in a push-pull conversation? It may not be always, and it can change depending on their mood, depending on the situation, depending on the day, depending on the parent, depending on the person. But when you notice that you are pulling at the end of the rope, it's an invitation to reassess the situation and disarm yourself. Put down the rope. It doesn't mean you have to walk away necessarily. A lot of times it's just not feeding into it. Sometimes our kids will be in a bad mood and they will purposely come into a room and say something to you that they know is going to upset you because they need that adrenaline dump. It's not conscious. It's just something that gets reinforced over time. I'm going to come in. You're annoying me. I'm going to say something like, you're annoying me, or why are you doing that? Or I'm going to say something to you that I know is going to trigger you. And then you're going to predictably come back at me, and it's going to physiologically feel like a release. Don't be that punching bag that's predictable when your child is looking for that dump, because we want to teach them healthy coping mechanisms on how to do that without us being the easy go-to. As long as we are the easy go-to, they're going to go to that. But if we're not the easy go-to, we anchor ourselves, we detach ourselves, we don't take things personally, we don't add the fuel to the fire, we're not the fuel line, eventually that behavior extinguishes because it's not reinforcing. It's not physiologically reinforcing. It's frustrating even, because I'm looking for a fight and you're not giving it to me. Why aren't you giving it to me? And so I have to look at myself. It's like shining a mirror back at the child or teenager to say, look at yourself. This isn't about me, right? If I'm trying harder than my kids, I know I need to put the rope down. And so sometimes they'll seek you out, and sometimes it happens as a result of them feeling overwhelmed with anxiety or OCD. And sometimes it's just a relationship that they have with a parent that is pretty much all the time. And so if that is happening, you want to ask yourself, how do I turn this upside down and redefine this relationship? Because it takes two to tango. And if you're not tangoing because you put the rope down, it's not going to go. Eventually, it will dissipate because you're not feeding the fuel line. Does that make sense? I hope so. Well, I hope that you found that helpful. It was a good topic to talk about. Don't forget to check out my new OCD workbook. If you want to give your kids some clinically sound advice at their fingertips, you can check that out at natashadaniels.com/OCD book. If you are enjoying this podcast, don't forget to hit a star and rate it. That actually really does help podcasts. And if you have a few extra seconds to leave a review, you know I greatly appreciate that. I didn't have any to review to to read today, not review, I didn't have any to read today because a whole bunch of you did post in January and then I have none for February. So I always like to end my show reading one, but I don't have any. So maybe if you leave a review, I'll be reading yours next time. Don't forget to find the sparkle in everything you do, and I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.